You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD. Now the boxes will all be aligned if you're watching the video. With me this week, I have Nicole Hale and Chris McFeely. Chris Triplett is out this week, so he will be played by a picture of Ben Kingsley in a movie that we don't know, but we're saying is him as the Mandarin, but it's not him as the Mandarin. It's him as something else. So there's that.
Or something like that there.
Or something like that.
I always knew Triplett would make a good Gandhi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, alas, this week he is Gandhi with the wind and will not be here. So.
Oh, no.
I did it.
You didn't.
So, it is Fanboy Versus the not prequel to the show. This is not the not prequel to this show, which is happening now live. So I went and saw Prometheus.
I went and saw Prometheus.
I don't know. It's not a prequel to being a prequel of a movie. Alien.
You're confusing it, sir.
Yes, I was confused, but it was a good movie. It was I walked out and I was like, that was a good movie. It shouldn't have been. It wasn't great.
No, it was a nice looking film.
Yeah. It was that.
There's a lot of big ideas that it did not pay off in the slightest.
That opening bit was really wacky.
Oh, that was cool, but then it was like,
why did that happen?
No, nothing. Anyway. It didn't even pay off the premise of being a prequel to Alien.
No, it did none of those things.
It paid off nothing that it promised, but it was very pretty. And Fassbender was great, Michael Fassbender.
Oh my God, yes. That was like, best thing ever. That made me, I think, forget all the other stuff. I was just like, that's so great. Just good stuff. I mean, it felt like maybe this is going to be like the 2001 of like our generation, you know, where it's
it really wanted to be 2001.
Yeah, I mean, and in the sense,
all the music and everything. Why is everything activated by why all the big sweeping scenes of orchestral music and space vistas, and then the engineer's console looks like an organ, like an instrument, the music as David looks around at all the holograms, and I'm like, you know, this looks pretty, but why is that machine turned on by a recorder?
It's a good question. These are all good questions.
There's no validation of any of its ideas.
I recommend the post that I haven't read yet, which Chris McFeely has put up, and apparently I need to read.
Yes, so. Somebody put the link up on the AllSpark, and I read it. Very interesting dissection of the ideas based on apparently some things that Ridley Scott talked about in an interview with Movies.com, which didn't make it into the film, but which cast a lot of it in a new and rather sacrilegious light. And, yeah, it's doing the rounds on Twitter now. So, go on my Twitter. That's just @ChrisMcFeely, and the link is there.
Sweet. Check it out. All right. Anyway, this is a comic book show. We'll talk about comic books. Is there news?
There's a little news. Just a little bit of news. And it's really just, two-part news. And it is confirmation of something we were talking about rumors of last week, which is that it has now been confirmed that August will be zero month at DC. It is going to be all zero issues to commemorate the 1 year anniversary of the New 52. A month of standalone zero issues, like telling origin stories, filling in back history and things about the new timelines of the New 52 characters. So that's happening.
See, you heard it sort of first here, but not really.
But not really, because I heard it somewhere else.
You heard it somewhere else. Yeah, and I think I've seen some of the covers, too, and they're sort of like a black and white version of first issue, and then the character's like breaking out through the
Seems
page.
To be black and white versions of the first issues of the New 52 comics, of number ones, like the number one, the covers of number one of...
And we also have the... We also have, what, the four... Oh, is this your second part of the four?
Yes, okay. This is the second part of the news is that, along with this month, presumably launching with Issue Zero, are the announcement of four new series for the New 52. Now, we know... So this does really put the lie into my speculation last week that Justice League International is just a one-for-one cancellation and replacement with something... Yes. replacement with something similar. Because it ain't.
Because then we thought, okay, it's going to be Booster. And so I'm like reading through this list. Yeah. And what's the list?
No Booster. The list is... where's the... Okay, right. There is Sword and Sorcery.
Huh?
Or Sword of Sorcery.
Reports
seem to be differing on that one. Sword of Sorcery. Which is a new fantasy series in the style of... what's that other book? GI Combat or
Cancelled in Six. Yeah, well,
just really GI Combat, where it's a lead story and a backup story. So that's why it's called Sword of Sorcery and not Amethyst Princess of Gemworld, which is the lead strip in it. Amethyst is going to be written by. This is one that I've seen a lot of people like thinking they should have brought back. I've never read any of the original stuff myself, but a lot of people seem to think this one should have been brought back for the New 52. So I imagine a lot of people are pleased with this one. Written by Christy Marks, with art by Aaron Lopresti, and the backup strip's going to be a Beowulf strip by Tony Bedard, with art by Jesus Seis. One would think that at least one of those will cycle out after a period of time and be replaced by something else. I think we can, you know, start up a pool to see how long it takes before Mike Grell's Warlord winds up in the comic. And probably one of the more interesting ones on this list. Dan Didio is going to be writing a new Phantom Stranger series with Brent Anderson on the art, which is interesting given what we've learned about this Stranger. Excuse me, in the last month. Since the Free Comic Book Day issue. Let's see how a comic book starring the adventures of Judas Iscariot goes over with the 1 million mums out there.
Oh, yeah, they'll love that.
Yeah. The slightly odd Team 7, which is another example of Wildstorm and DC history getting merged, because Team 7 was a Wildstorm thing. So this is going to be a tale of... this is set in the past, apparently. But the Team 7, which is going to include Dinah Lance, which is, of course, probably not the current Black Canary, maybe the previous Black Canary, I don't know. Amanda Waller, Steve Trevor, John Lynch, Alex Fairchild, Cole Cash, and Slade Wilson. There are at least two people on that list. I don't know who they are, so I'm going to assume they're Wildstorm characters.
Yeah.
And then the fourth one, probably the oddest one, I have to be honest here, is Talon, which is... written by James, lean in here, James Tynion the fourth. Although it's like idea by Scott Snyder and James Tynion, and then written by James. No, the script actually written by Tynion, with art by Gillam March. So that'll be quite nice to look at. And it is about the only Talon to ever escape the clutches of the Court of Owls, which seems to be a rather specious choice for an ongoing series, I have to say.
So basically, we get another Bat book with a new Bat male character, and yet no service to any of the other female Bat family that have been vanished in the New 52.
Well, yeah.
Okay. something to point out. They've gone through the purpose of making up a new character from the new event. And that character gets a book. This is canceled in six.
As opposed to
anything else. I mean, does the Bat family need another book?
Well, it's just you put specific emphasis on gender, so I was asking.
Well,
who you
I'm
want.
Just saying, it's like, okay, if you're going to add another Bat book, why not appease some of the fans that are, you know, asking for something along that line? But no, you're going to create another Bat book and you're going to put a new character in it.
This does seem a little short for this world, I have to say.
Yeah, six issues done.
Well, maybe not six. Nothing's gone that short. But the interesting thing is we don't know what's been cancelled to replace them, except for Justice League International. So there's three more books that are going to be coming to an end with September. July, presumably.
Yeah, July,
what would your guess be, Felix?
Well, my guess would have immediately been probably Grifter. But apparently, no Rob Liefeld titles are being cancelled, amazingly enough. So that rules out Grifter, Savage Hawkman, and Deathstroke.
Does he have pictures of Dan DiDio like getting a blowjob from a child or something? I mean, how is it that none of those books are canceled?
Maybe they're, well, I don't know. I mean, but it's just like with Grifter and Deathstroke supposed to be in Team 7, you wonder, you know, what's going on there. I would be amazed if Captain Atom wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
At this stage.
Don't know anyone that's reading that.
Yeah.
I know, it's like, it's not that everybody's railing against it or anything. That's the thing. Captain Atom isn't being slammed. It's just not being talked about at all. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Better not cancel my Animal Man.
Oh no. That's a primary deal. Yeah.
Voodoo's probably a good candidate as well.
I don't know.
I haven't heard anything bad about. Maybe Stormwatch?
What, is Hawk and Dove canceled
yet?
Well,
they did just change.
Yeah. Hawk and Dove got canceled there for the second round.
Yeah. Stormwatch might be, because they changed writers on that. And I don't know if that's doing any better.
I don't know.
Who's writing Deathstroke? Is that Life?
That's Liefeld.
That's Liefeld as well. God damn it. Yeah, that would have been that was like immediately the first guess is that it was going to be Deathstroke, Grifter, and something else.
Hawkman is his other one, but he's just plotting Hawkman and Grifter. But he's writing and drawing Deathstroke.
Right. God, I don't know. They need to cancel that Red Hood book. Maybe they are canceling it.
Red Hood and the Outlaws? It hasn't been doing anything bad.
Just not doing anything, really. I mean, is anybody
reading
that's
it? True. I mean, the thing is, like, you look at the books that came out on the same week of the first month that kicked off so much controversy in Red Hood and Catwoman. They just, you know, Catwoman has shaped itself up into a pretty decent, you know, saucy crime thriller type thing, you know, but there's been nothing in either of those books, even a tenth as controversial in any shape or form at all. As was seen in their first issue, it's like there's nothing. Yeah. They have cleaned up their acts with soap and hot water. It's crazy. When you know anybody picking that book up, hoping for some, you know, bat boot knocking or orange jubblies is going to be severely disappointed.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that'll be the thing, though. Who knows? It's so odd. It's, you know, it's just, you never wonder what are the sacred cows? What are they going to, you know, what's their idea? It's all based on what direction they're moving in, too, because obviously some of these books are probably going to connect to whatever their, you know, big crossover event that they're trying to work towards is going to be. Although it seems kind of odd that we've gone, you know, now we think about it, we're working on a full year. And we really haven't had any kind of major event in the DC other than the introduction of the 52. I think it is. I mean, I don't think it's a bad... Oh, but yeah, let me clarify and say this. I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think it's kind of interesting. I think the books have been fine for that, you know. I don't think there's been any loss out of the books. It's like, man, it would be really great an event. You know what I mean? Especially after reading...
And you've had these micro-events, you know. Sure. You've had the Court of Owls, and you've had the little crossovers here and there between, whatever, Justice League Dark and... I'm Vampire.
Well, crossovers have. I mean, that's a little bit different. I would categorize that slightly differently, but yeah, nothing like an event though, like an AVX or anything like that.
No. I think it'll probably be a little while before they do. I mean, we've got the Trinity War coming up next year, which will probably be on a slightly larger scale. But I still don't know if it'll still be like event scale. You know, world shattering. Yeah.
They did a good job of that already.
Yeah, the world's pretty shattered right now.
So, but none of
those four really grabbed me, though.
No, I can't say that. I mean, when I read the list, I really felt like, oh, I need to read that book, you know.
Yeah. If there was one, it'd probably be Phantom Stranger, but did he was writing it, so Nata?
Yeah, that was my thing. I was like, oh, Phantom Stranger book.
Did he?
Damn it.
fantasy sword and sorcery stuff doesn't do it for me, so I won't be going for that series.
If you want fantasy, go read Dungeons and Dragons.
Indeed. Well, I would say Journey into Mystery, because it's almost but not quite.
Yeah.
That gets as close to fantasy as I need. Yeah. Talon just seems misjudged as a concept, and I've already forgotten the fourth one while I'm sitting here.
Yeah, that seems to be like, you know, pushing a book out, the seven, the Team Seven.
Oh, yeah, Jesus, no ta, thanks, bye, yeah. No, see you later.
Half and half team, no thanks, done.
It's all you, none of my books are cancelled, I don't need to replace anything.
Yeah, well, as long as, well, there's...
Oh, well, that I know of.
Yeah, that you know of, I mean, how do you know, you know?
And I don't see the cancelling action
I'm really broke. I mean, to me, I'm like, I'm almost like having palpitations because it's like, there's not going to be a Booster Gold book. There's not.
But you're going to get the TV show. You're going to get the TV show.
It's so. Not. I know. But I am not going
on a TV show when there's no comic for it to promote.
I know. It just doesn't that seem odd? I mean, what the hey? You know, it seems like there should be a booster book. Like at least
I'm extremely worried how bright it is over at McFeely's Land.
I know.
Is it almost late. 10 o'clock?
It is. It's freaky.
Wow. It's that further north thing.
How bright it is.
Wow. It's kind of scary. The
Earth sucks, man.
Strange.
Oh, okay. Well, there's one other bit of news that I did just remember, which also goes back to some news we were talking about last week regarding Iron Man 3. Which is a contradictory bit of news, which says that that is in fact not James Badge Dale in the Iron Patriot armor, which is why people were assuming this was the quote-unquote Cold Blood character, because they thought that was James Badge Dale. Apparently, it is just a stunt guy.
Really?
Wearing this. And it's not... So it's not this... Apparently, it's War Machine in a new patriotic color scheme. If he's going to work for the military, this would make some degree of sense.
That's even worse. I want the other thing back.
That'll get scoured off, I think, in no time.
God.
And also, we've seen a set photograph that shows a large, like a large sign for Advanced Idea Mechanics.
Yay!
Yay! Oh, and it's been super duper, absolutely 100% confirmed that Avengers. Yeah, the cartoon is no more.
Uh-oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Big fail.
Well, it's kind of like, I don't know. I'd sort of already made my peace, and it was like almost like non-news, you know? I think at this point.
Yeah, same here.
I felt really strong about the early, you know, sort of bit of comment and stuff, and based on other things that we knew were happening. So I wasn't like heartbroken. I know like Brian was like, you know, sending emails and like posting like, oh my God, the end is nigh. It's like,
well, it's like Marvel had a really, really great run on cartoons for a few years when DC was off on the cartoons. And when I say off, I mean they only had Brave and the Bold, which is not a slight against Brave and the Bold. It's just that was all they had going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But Marvel was on frickin' fire with Wolverine and the X-Men and Spectacular Spider-Man and Iron Man Armored Adventures, and then the Avengers came along to fill the gap after those ended, and then it's like just some Jeff Loeb just marched in with a large pin and just poof, just popped the balloon, and here's the Ultimate Spider-Man and a new young hip teen Avenger, and then DC is, oh my God, if Young Justice's curveballs get any curvier, they're going to be swinging back around and smacking me in the face. Holy shit, that show.
Also
holy crap, that show. And Green Lantern managed to catch itself on in short order and prove great, and we've got the Beware the Batman show coming up next year as well. DC are firing again, and Marvel is stalling so badly.
Direct films as well. I mean, what Superman and the Elite
The
Elite.
That's one other thing I was going to say is that next week Superman versus the Elite is out. So if we all watch that, JD, then we can talk about it next week.
Yeah. It's probably somewhere I can find it.
Unlike
my wife is gone, I have plenty of free time now.
Well,
right?
Good. Unlike that last one that I can't even remember what it was now.
Oh, Green Lantern. The Green Lantern movie took me forever to watch.
No, and then not that Batman, one. The last animated
year one. Year one?
No, the one after that. Doom. Justice League Doom.
Oh, Justice League Doom?
Is that what I said?
I didn't hear you. Sorry.
I don't think I still haven't watched that, actually, now that I think about it.
Which we never reviewed.
Yeah, we never reviewed. I'll do a better job. I'll get that this time. Because, like I said, I have all the time in the world now. So Yeah.
Because, oh, you know, that's one I don't think we've announced as well, is that, well, we know that, I can't remember what order it is in now. I think Flashpoint, we knew Flashpoint was the next one. We think we talked about that before. But I think it's also been confirmed at this point that the one after Flashpoint is going to be a two-part, two-film adaptation of The Dark Knight Returns.
Ooh.
Starring Peter Weller as Batman.
Oh. Wow.
RoboCop his own damn self.
Hell yes. Hell yeah. That's awesome. That sounds interesting. What do you know, or what's the... I mean, I know that some... There have been rumblings of this Justice League live-action movie script thing.
Warner Brothers said this week, we're totally going to make one. Oh, yeah.
They're just saying, like, oh, if Avengers did well... Yeah, they're just saying, if Avengers did well, let's do our own.
It's like they're looking at this, and they think they can just put out a movie with the words Justice League on it, and it'll do well because Avengers did well. Guys, just look at what Marvel did, and just do that.
Well, yeah, I mean...
But if there is not some kind of teaser on the end of Man of Steel to go, by the way, bigger universe, I will just punch my own self in the head.
I mean, there's... absolutely no lead up to this. I mean, if you think about, I mean, Avengers, we go all the way back to Iron Man 1, you know, Iron Man 2, Incredible Hulk, you know, Thor and Cap. I mean, that's, you know, what, four movies?
Five movies.
Well, they're saying that Christian Bale's done with Batman. I mean, they'd have to
Batman anyway. Yeah, so that's going to have to be a reboot.
They'll have to reboot it into a format, like, well, we talked at length. A week or two about the nature of... Well, I did, sorry.
Yeah, no,
I rambled on about the nature
whoa,
of...
Whoa. McFeely rambling on? No way.
But they would really have to reboot Batman into a format that could... into a universe that could accommodate all the fantastic stuff Justice League will require for it to be feasible in any way, you know? I mean, I could maybe understand the thought process that says we should do Avengers first. I mean, we should do Justice League first, so we can just, we don't have to reboot Superman and Batman again, and that we can launch these complete no-hoper characters who will have no chance of a film on their own, like Aquaman or Martian Manhunter or Hawkman, without Justice League behind them. Because, you know, I'm not knocking the characters, even though I did just call them no-hopers, but they are never... ever getting a film on their own beforehand without something to launch them.
There's a reason the Entourage, you know, said that the Aquaman movie was
a joke. Yeah.
You know, because, there's no way. I don't even know what you would do in that movie. But
I've said it before, Flash is DC's last hope for a new character, new movie franchise thing. Green Lantern had its shot and failed. Wonder Woman doesn't seem like...
That wasn't even me
commenting on its quality. I'm not having this argument. It still had its shot and failed. That's
all that matters. In the public eye, money.
So. Yeah. It happens.
I'm still going to defend it.
That's fine.
You can do that. You're still wrong, but it's okay.
Yeah. You have the right to be wrong.
And Wonder Woman doesn't seem like it'll ever happen.
No, not at this
point. But there's always rumors about Wonder Woman movie.
Of course, because one hasn't been made, and that's why there'll be rumors. But, I just don't.
But an Ant-Man film. Well, no, to be fair, those are actually fucking valid.
Yeah. Ooh. Anyway, I just think that's funny. I mean, there's been comments. Some executive somewhere that's seeing dollar signs instead of cents. Did I really just say that? I really just said that, didn't I?
I didn't catch what you said.
I said some executive seeing dollar signs instead of cents.
You get it? Because cents is bunny.
Yeah,
but it's also like...
Yeah! I just came up with a new saying right there, kids. Anyway. Yeah, it's a bad idea. There's a freebie for you, Warner Brothers, DC. This is a bad idea.
The stupid thing is, the Green Lantern feels like it's going to do this. feels like it's getting somewhere with Amanda Waller in there and the weird little backstory she gets and everything. It feels like she can be the Nick Fury for DC, just popping in out of nowhere with no real relevance to the film. And then she might maybe die because all they do with her is fuck her through a plate glass window and the film doesn't even care enough about her to say whether she lived or died. It's like they go out of their way to just make a comment as well that this is the first time Earth's ever met aliens, and it's like Superman. So you're just saying fuck it. Okay, cool.
God.
But let's not get me started on Green Lantern.
Yeah, let's not go off on that too much. So, great then. Any other news or?
That's the height of what I know.
Cool. So we are rolling out a new-ish format since we're post 100 episodes, and we're going to try new things to be bold. So instead of doing individual reviews, we are going to do a recommendations. Then we will move to a 1-2 review at the end of the show. We will go ahead and tell you that the two reviews at the end of the show will be Minutemen from the Before Watchmen line and the current issue of Avengers vs. X-Men. That is issue 5? Round 5. Yes. So if you haven't read those, please pause the recording, read those, come back. Or you can just listen.
I could just like ignore us.
I didn't read one of the two, and I'm
so
gonna
she's still going to go with it. So good deal. So otherwise, we will give you some quick recommendations off of things that we read this week for things that you may enjoy or maybe not enjoy based on those comments. So Nicole, please feel free to get us started.
Okay. Well, I'm still going to stick with my new number one recommendation. So get your drinks out. So, the new number one I'm going to talk about is called Extermination. It's by Boom. It's kind of like a good cop, bad cop team up. You have this one individual. He almost is dressed like Batman without the cape. And he's like the white knight. He doesn't do anything wrong. And his little partner in crime, he's the one that does all the killing, all the bad stuff, you know, but they work together. But in the end, the good guy has to come and break one of his solid rules. So basically,
I thought you were
going to
say fingers.
No.
That would have been cool, too.
Because he's taken like strict like vows not to kill anyone, not to do anything bad. But at the end, he has to come face to face with breaking one of these. So it's because they're on this planet that is being invaded by aliens, and they're being exterminated. Hence the name Extermination. So there's a lot of different little trials in here, and it was only a buck. Definitely worth a dollar. And like I said, if you like that kind of sci-fi buddy cop feel to it, this is great. It's great. Yeah. I had a lot of fun with it. Not a whole lot, not really graphic, but there is some kind of stuff. A lot of alien violence, I'll say that.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Who's the creative team on this one?
This one is Simon Spurrier.
Oh, Simon Spurrier.
Yeah, and Jeffrey Edwards. So,
usually a good reason to pick something up.
Yeah, you know what? And I like the art in it. It's just fun, you know. And especially you get that, what's he gonna do at the end? You know, they leave you with that cliffhanger. So it's good writing, good art, and for a buck you can't go wrong. So, recommendation number one. There we go. And for my next one, which I actually reviewed as a number one, but I've been continuing reading because it's awesome. It's Thief of Thieves, and this is issue number 5. This is kind of similar to Ocean's 11.
Yes, I remember this as, you know.
Mm-hmm. So
is this still about the guy? This is one last big job, an art thief who's trying to pull one last big job where he gets out and it's a big Ocean's 11 style job.
So this is the issue where you see, okay, this is it. and they're starting to get the team. So in this issue, you're introduced to all the different team members, and each one of them is given a page that says their real name, it says their alias, their job, and like this last panel of how they're meeting up with Celia, who is bringing them all together. And it's just really fun because just in these little four panels, you get to know the person and their personality really quick. It's great. And the whole story is just them coming together, kind of bickering it out, you know, arguing what went right and what went wrong the last heist, you know. And yes, this series is just a lot of fun. And again, this is one that's going to be getting a TV show. AMC is going to be doing this. So
Here
you go, get your heads up. But in this issue, you also get to know about his previous personal life with a ex-wife and his son. So, yay. Yeah, it's really good. Like I said, if you're into that Ocean's 11 and you like to see how things come together, this is the issue to start with, just so you can see all the different people that are introduced.
Well, I love it when a plan comes together.
Well, yeah. I wonder how many episodes of that will take place on a farm.
Actually, a lot of this takes place in a house that he bought on an estate sale, and he has pitched because the whole family got killed or something.
I think we get two seasons out of just that house, probably.
And so he lives in this house with really odd pictures and stuff of people that he doesn't know.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good place to start if you haven't read the other four issues. It's good so you could get to know the other characters. I'm loving this series, so highly recommend it. There's some really funny parts in it, too. So
nice.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. My recommendation for this week, and there's a lot of stuff that came out and I didn't get to read it all. So the best of what I want to recommend that isn't already being recommended or something we're reviewing is World's Finest. This is issue 2, World's Finest.
I didn't pick this one up.
Huntress and Power Girl. It's actually interesting. There's a couple of interesting things going on, not even just story-wise, but just from an art standpoint. It's George Perez on the art, and this is, in one book, it's an interesting example of how much difference color can make, because it's all George Perez art, but they split up the color sequences, the color and ink sequences, between the flashback sequences and the parts of the book that are taking place in the current time.
Well, no, the flashback sequences are by Kevin McGuire.
I thought it's different. I just read it. Why did it not say?
No, that is a totally different
art.
It
does say different art.
Yeah.
No,
Kevin McGuire does the...
Yeah,
does
Kevin McGuire.
The
I hate
past
you, Chris McFeely. Why do you have to? Why do I have to be wrong all the
time? I didn't even read the book, motherfucker.
No, you made me wrong. Anyway, well, anyway, I'll take that back. Anyway, forget what I said. But it's still a good book. mainly, you know, we have this is following the standard pattern, I guess, of that New 52, where you have a new villain show up, and it seems like part of this arc is going to flow over that. I mean, the deal here, you know, of course, is that, you know, Huntress and Power Girl, you know, coming from the other Earth, part of their question is, did anything follow them? And that seems to be a concern, in particular because this new villain that shows up that I'm going to call, he has a name in here, but I don't know what it is. It's in Japanese.
Who?
Something like that. He calls himself something in here. But anyway. that thing. but apparently he's able to inflict pain on Kara in the same way that she was when they came through. But I like to call him not Monitor, because he's not the Anti-Monitor, even though in the, I don't know, like the first feeling I got out of the front of that book was like, it sort of, if you squint your eyes, look like the Anti-Monitor, but no, there's an interesting thing. I mean, we get a little bit more backstory in this book about what they did right after they showed up, and you know how they're making money and all that sort of thing. So it's just interesting. Like I said, it's neat to see a different take, and yet it's not a different take because this is much more similar in the sense of like it's a different way to do what happened after Crisis on Infinite Earths in a sense, because, you know, those characters were essentially taken from an Earth 2 and brought to a primary Earth, whereas these characters were literally done that way instead of, you know, just getting completely new backstories. So, good so far. Interesting. Of course, George Perez art, great. You know, good stuff. So, check that out. World's Finest. And I would have read Earth 2, but for some reason my shop didn't give it to me, along with Dial H. So, whatever.
We got to talk about that when it comes.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So. That's the issue that is in the news.
Yes. So, it's good stuff. I actually finally got the first issue of Dial H and thumbed through that and stuff about halfway through that. Went through all the Boy Chimney stuff, which was awesome.
Pick up that brickway, Marley!
Have you read Earth 2, McFeely?
I have given issue 2 of Earth 2 a skim over. Haven't read it much in detail, but enough to tick up what was going on. Flash's new costume sucks.
Really?
I agree!
I've done this up.
So bad. Oh, Jesus, no. Give me back the hat. Give me back his hat. God's sake, Mercury actually had the hat. Why are you tying Mercury to J. Garrick's origin if you're not just going to give him the hat? Why isn't the hat magic and the source of his powers and a gift from God? What is this? This is simple, basic stuff.
I'm so glad you feel the same way I do.
Oh, it's spectacular. I mean, I know they're trying to youth it up and sex it up a bit, but jeans, pullover, hat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really, that would be... Wow. Okay. Chris, then, give us your recommendations.
So I did get Dial H number 2, and I gotta keep recommending this son of a bitch. This issue is called Connection Lost, same creative team, China Mieville and Mateus Santaloco on the art. If you had any concerns about the level of imagination on display in the first issue ebbing off, no less than 8 new heroes appear in the second issue of Dial H.
Wow.
What are you talking about? There's Dial like 7 appears in the first 3 pages.
Five of them appear on the first page as Nelson tests, you know, from Shamanticore, which is a big robed magic staff wielding manticore, to Double Bluff, some kind of magic dude with cards flying around his head, to Hole Punch, a 3-armed boxer with hammers for hands.
Oh my God.
I think probably the highlight of the issue is Skeet, who is a human clay pigeon who shatters into deadly shrapnel when shot and then reforms. I mean, because these are not just like... I mean, admittedly, we don't know what Double Bluff does. Human virus is fairly self-explanatory. Shamanticore is probably all in the visuals. Hole Punch is a beefy guy. Pelican Army seems to just command an army of pelicans. But Skeet is, like, fantastic. And he floods a bank robbery, shot to pieces, shrapnel flies in, takes all the thugs down, and then just pop, come back together again. Fantastic stuff.
Wow.
But this issue is also very much about growing the universe, as Nelson tries to investigate the homes of previous people that this mysterious organization that his friend is working for. We get a look at the sub-boss, this XM, and the creatures that he has under his command, one of whom Nelson winds up fighting as Iron Snail, who is just like a big GI guy lugging a massive transforming metal shell with rocket launchers and treads and guns and shit in it, all right?
I was wondering, how heavy is that thing?
I'm just trying to pick my jaw up off the floor. What?
You know, probably not as good as the first issue, simply because, damn, that first issue was good, you know, but this is really growing. We're like, while investigating, now as Control-Alt-Delete, living computer static, who sees everything as electronic impulses and binary code and can command what seems to be like the fabric of reality or something by manipulating the code. You know, he comes across someone with powers as well who knows something about the dial. And it hasn't taken, like, the identity of XN seems to be revealed in a rather surprising twist. And There's a great sense of forward motion, but the mysteries are still running high. But they're not. Whereas the first issue was very, very vague on the mysteries. You were just more blinded by the sheer level of imagination that was being thrown at you with the heroes that were being created. The mysteries do come in a little thicker, and they start to take form in this issue. But you're still left with a lot of questions by the end of it. But frankly, my concern was that, after such a fantastic first issue with such great concepts, that maybe the ideas would start to stall out. And I realize we're only two issues in, but I mean, if he's pumping out eight characters per issue, who we're likely never to see again.
Wow.
Because it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
I am so on board. I mean, that is one of the best, not of the second wave of the New 52, but of all of the New 52. That is some quality stuff.
Yeah. I just to add on to that, I mean, that just that half bit of the first one was just like, you're in a whole new world, kids.
Offhandedly is no way to kill.
Freaky.
That's good. And speaking of really good stuff from the New 52, the other thing I'm going to talk about this week is one I recommend all the time as well. It is Action Comics, because I think this issue of Action Comics, which is as raised by Grant Morrison with Rags Morales on the artwork again for a full issue once again, though I think Morales' art seems tangibly lesser in, it's still fine, but it seems lesser in quality, this issue. I think maybe he's trying to pick up the pace a little bit to meet the monthly schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel it has suffered a little bit as a consequence. But I think this issue is a really good example of what Grant Morrison is doing with the book. Because on the surface, following on from last issue's epilogue, this is, not last issue rather, but the issue beforehand, this issue is very much just a story of Superman having to fake his death as Clark Kent in order to throw off Nimrod the Hunter, who has been hired by the Little Man to find him and kill him, and has deduced his real identity, and he has to fake his death in order to throw him off the scent. It's a very simple, straightforward idea for a story, and, you know, we talk about this book being the best Spider-Man book you'll read. That's not true, of course. That's Dan Slott's Amazing Spider-Man, but
yeah.
As far as the Spider-Man comparisons with this go, I mean, this is Kraven the Hunter.
Oh, yeah,
this
is
the professional hunter hunting, although I don't know if they've ever done a story about Kraven tracking down Spider-Man's real identity or not. I'm not very familiar with the thick backstory of Kraven. But that's the surface level story that's at work. But then there is, like, you've got to look pretty close to see what's going on with this backstory. But it's from first page, third panel, you know. Nimrod has made it to Smallville and, you know, figured out that, you know, they follows the trail of the alien that fell from the sky and figures out who Superman, the Superman is Clark. But just, he says so offhandedly that you wouldn't, you know, but if you're paying attention, and you, as I always say, when you pick up and open the first page of Action Comics, you better have the brain, you better have your brain in gear. Sit, you pay attention, you pore over this. And the first, when he says, two separate locations in Kansas turn up two family farms at the epicenter of a 20-year-long pattern of Midwest Superman sightings. And you wonder, what? What's that? And I start to think, oh, well, maybe they just moved farms or something, and I don't think about it very much. But then later in the issue, you've got Lois looking through, you've got Lois with a scrapbook of Superman sightings. She studied Superman for this long. And Clark highlights the fact that she's got a lot of clippings and things from 10 years before Superman appeared with stories that are believed to be related, but which he knows aren't, because he knows it wasn't him, which stuff that went down at the Blake farm. And then also in the middle of this issue, with no hint that it's even related, we have a mysterious, like, electrical or lightning-powered figure with a glowing chest emblem, everything else about him hidden in a cloak, who seems to take control of the mind of a trucker to give him a lift into Metropolis. And he identifies himself as Adam. And there's absolutely no indication that these things are related, none whatsoever, but Adam Blake is the real name of Captain Comet, who was raised on a Midwest Kansas farm.
Oh.
And Adam Blake is very significant for being a character, a vanishingly small number of characters whose origin period lies between the Golden and Silver Age, outside of the time of mainstream superhero popularity. So he really does, in essence, predate the modern day DC universe as it existed with, you know, with the birth of the Silver Age and with Barry Allen. He is very much, in that sense, a proto-Superman.
Hmm.
Now, you don't talk about the levels of shit that are going on here. Never mind, you know, when the little man pops up back at the end of this issue, and the whole, and you know, the state that Nimrod is reduced to by the end of it, and the way the whole thing loops back around in the time loop that goes back to the two-parter with the, because Nimrod the Hunter was one of the anti-Superman army back in that two-parter. Mm-hmm. Never mind, again, that Lois Lane mentions her niece, what was her niece's name? Her niece Susie, who, you know, if you know your Superman lore, has previous connections with Mrs. Pitlick and was seen in the background in one of the shots of the anti-Superman army. There is, you know, if you are paying attention, Action Comics will reward you. And if you know, if I mean, okay, I didn't know that about Captain Atom, Captain Calmet. I had to go look up who Adam Blake might be, you know, but that's what it prompts me to do. That's what I enjoy about Action Comics. It rewards those willing to think. And, you know, I've said it before. I get Grant Morrison now. I didn't used to, but I do now. I'm so glad that I decided to give Action Comics a go off the back of, you know, I said to myself, I've said it before in this show, if he was going to do another Batman where suddenly years later it was all going to make sense, I wanted in on it from the start. Yeah. And I'm so getting that from Action Comics. Like, I mean, if you don't go in this with your brain fully switched on and all attentions on everything that is going on in this comic, you are not, well, I mean, I was going to say you're not getting the most of it, but I suppose that's really true of any decent comic. And if you don't go in paying full attention, you know, but I mean, there are secondary and tertiary levels of stuff. And I'm sure, I say it with every issue of Action Comics, I am sure there is stuff going on here. I haven't got a baldy notion.
Well, like, I'm confused by, I mean, and not confused in a bad way, but it's like, is the Justice League bit in this?
Yes, well, the Justice League, I didn't know it at the time, but as I understand it, Action Comics 1 was supposed to be set 6 months before Justice League, number one. So we have now caught up to, this appears to be very soon after the Justice League has come together, because they are still meeting in that abandoned printing press from the first Justice League story arc and everything, yes. So
he's not full-time using the new costume then, though?
He doesn't seem to be, no, he seems to be using that professionally, and then in his day-to-day business, using his jeans and a t-shirt.
But there's still just really good stuff going on in this book. I mean, this bit with the hamsters and stuff I thought was a really interesting, you know, way to
Wait. It's a bit with the hamsters?
Yeah.
You can't
you have to read it. I can throw that out there and just say that the stuff with the hamsters is interesting, and then you should read it.
Yeah.
That's what the recommendation
like,
is
if you're
for.
Worried about the you know, if you're worried about a slightly, like, dickish Superman, which seemed to be a lot of people's concerns, you know, some of the stuff going on over in Justice League, when it was our very first introduction to Superman, a lot of people expressed some concerns over the cocky, dickish attitude he's displayed there. And, you know, people worrying that the more socialist defender of the people style attitude maybe engenders a more cocky attitude. And we've seen it in Action Comics too. But it still seems like this bit with the hamsters that remind you that, no, you know, this is Superman. And if there isn't a greater, like, expression or metaphor for the way this Superman is really about looking out for the little guy, I don't know what is. And I've just been flipping through here, and I'm remembering in. Here's another callback that rewards, you know. Gus Guns Grundig from the very first issue, who was on the train in the first issue, he pops back up for a page.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If you don't remember him, you're not going to be like, who's that dude? Why does he know him? And then he says, you ruined my life. And I'm like, why? But I remember it because brain is on. The ignition is turned. It's not always turned when I pick up a comic, but when Action Comics, I always make sure I got a nice quiet room. I'm sitting down and all attentions are on it. And it's a particularly good issue that exemplifies, like, the duality of story that Morrison is trying to do, from the crazy high concept ideas looping around through time travel and things that have been seeded chronologically after they've already happened, and the ties to DC history with Teen Superman fakes death to escape guy who thinks he's found out who he really is.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Three level even storytelling. So, as ever, always recommend it. Very one-sentence recommendation for this week as well, more for any 90s kids listening from the UK will want to pick up the Mighty Thor annual this week, which is written by J.M. DeMatteis, and it's drawn by Richard Elson, who drew some of Kieran Gillen's Thor issues and has drawn some Journey into Mystery issues as well, but I recommend him from the UK kids because they'll remember him as the artist of the Sonic the Hedgehog comics over here. Yes, Richard Elson draws a story featuring Skryer. Skryer from the Clone Saga. Is it 1995? I don't know, but if you think...
Wow.
I don't know. Sonic the Comic Artist and Skryer. Not the Skryer you may remember, but the actual heavenly creature Skryer who inspired the Brotherhood of Skryers, who I think J.M. DeMatteis is like the only writer who gives a sideways toss about. It's a big cosmic book that's really not a Thor story at all, but more about Oblivion and then the Silver Surfer's in it, and it's a weird cosmic story. If you're looking for something a bit unusual, but not like it's a weird one, but 90s kids, there's enough elements in there you might want to check that out.
Huh?
Yeah, Mighty Thor Annual.
Cool. All right. Awesome. So we now move on to the review segment of our story.
Yeah.
So first up, I'll take lead on... I think we're going to get AVX out of the way before we get to Watchmen. We'll leave that for the very, very end. So I'll talk through AVX a little bit. AVX, round 5, where shit got... Huh?
Yeah, there's no other way to describe the way the shit got.
The
shit got...
So we start out with, of course, we're on the blue side of the moon. Is that what this is? What did they
blue
say?
Area.
Blue area of the moon, which is a convenient way of having a fight on the moon because there's air there. Okay, and when
hey,
we
the,
last
the
left...
Area, the blue area is a thing that goes back to Lee and Kirby.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm just saying. It's a neat. It's still a convenient story way to
say,
hey, here's a place where enemies
All the important stuff that happens on the moon happens there.
Right, because people don't have to be in big spacesuits to have a fight there.
Yeah.
But Hope had been, I guess, betrayed, depending on your point of view, by Wolverine, and had... he had told the Avengers that she was there, and then the X-Men show up because I can't remember why. They tracked or something. I don't know what they did, but they showed up. So we have another reason to have a big breakout fight between the Avengers and the X-Men again.
I know that's the title of the series and everything, but I really was hoping that wasn't going to be the way this was going to go. And now that we are at the end of the first act, I mean, they've actually promoted this as the end of Act 1, I'm really hoping that the subsequent acts cannot be, like, story occurs around a clip show of all the fights taking place in the tie-in comics that don't even really fit with the continuity.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's...
I know it's in the title, but...
Yeah, it's one of those deals where it's like we heard it's Avengers versus X-Men fighting, we're like, okay, cool. And then we got
and
it,
then,
and it's like, well, then, yes, then could something happen? No.
You can run, she can go to one place. I mean, really, I mean, the midpoint of this arc is even worse, not in terms of quality, because I can definitely say I've still enjoyed reading this more than it, but the midpoint of this 5-issue arc is definitely even worse than Fear itself was for just being a clip show of fights that basically said... Go read the other books to see where these fights are happening.
Yeah.
Even though a lot of the tie-in books then didn't really do it. The team split up and went to, where was it? Latveria, the Savage Land, I forget where the other place was. Somewhere else, you know. And it was like, okay, so I guess that's what's going to be going on over in the tie-in books this month.
And versus.
And then,
like, pointless.
And then but then it's like, and then because Versus is where it really actually does kind of happen, because Secret Avengers is still about the guys out in space. Avengers last month was also about the guys out in space, but taking place at a point further forward in time than Secret Wars. And New Avengers is still telling a story about ancient Kun Lun decades ago that has nothing to do with anything that's going on in the present day. So where are all these tie-ins you're suggesting exist happening? Because it's not in the comics I'm reading. Could I maybe have something happen then, please?
Yeah. And if you wanted something to happen here, well, sort of. I guess.
But we definitely cannot deny that
something happened
in the course of this comic.
A shit ton of internal dialogue from Hope in this. And how many times is Wolverine going to be set on fire in the course of this?
I just want to know how many times Wolverine is going to go, oh, going to kill you. Oh, maybe not. Oh, yes, it will. Oh, yeah, wait, I got stuff.
No, you know, somebody stop me else.
You've got one reason to be here, guy.
Yeah, that's your job.
You like failed to do so like three times now.
Yeah. So basically that's it. Wolverine gets burnt again, tries to kill Hope after she begs him to kill him again, which is, I mean, really, we're doing that again. Okay.
Oh, no, that's what happens when the Phoenix happens.
Uh-huh.
And then had a tick bag Wolverine to spear them.
And Scott stops him,
if
of course.
You know what I mean.
Yeah,
Hank, really, you know, it's like, you know, Wolverine goes to spear a redhead with Phoenix fire, and Scott just totally blocks him.
Huh.
I smell a metaphor!
Hank Pym and Tony Stark have a crazy idea.
Shoot it.
They're going to shoot it. With an enormous shooting robot thing.
I have got to say, that is not the best design I've ever seen John Romita Jr. come
up
with.
Okay, wait, you're saying shooting robot. Is it more GoBot-ish?
It's a big GoBot. Yes, it is GoBot-ish, actually. It looks like a big GoBot power suit with straight arms and legs. Why it has arms and legs, I don't know, because all it does is fly and shoot a big...
It's just a gun.
Gun, oh, okay. Yeah. It's a flying gun with arms and legs.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a horrible design, but it's like, really, you can do better than that.
I don't want to knock Romita too hard, though, because, I got to say, whenever I first encountered Romita Jr. back in the 90s when I was getting into comics, like, I did not swarm to his style at all. And really, you know, even now, I still enjoy more of the stuff he was doing back in the 80s. But, you know, I got to say, first of all, I'm impressed he's done all 5 issues of this so far. And, I mean, I don't know if the plan is to have him do all 12.
Jim Lee, he would have done 3. And then,
yeah, because, I mean, he's done all 5 of this so far, and that's on a bi-monthly schedule, so I don't know if they're planning to change the artist when we move to the next act. But I have to say, I mean, I don't know, maybe if it's the increased schedule has caused him to loosen up his work a little bit, or just keep it simpler or whatever, but, I mean, I think the issues of this have been some of the best work I've seen out of him in years.
Oh, yeah. There's some great panels and stuff in there. I mean, I don't want to deny the art in here is good, you know.
Yeah.
But it definitely, that model, sure is...
Yeah, last issue in particular, like, I looked at it and I thought, somebody else must be inking this. This looks too neat and just simplified.
Where are all the scratchy lines in the...
yeah, but it's not. It's still Scott Hanna. Yeah, it's still Scott Hanna doing the art, and it's like doing the inks, and he's like a common inking partner of John Romita. I'm like, what happened? It looks... I mean, it's not like John Romita looks bad normally or anything. It took me a long time to get used to him, but I am used to him now. But even, I'm saying, it's like, this is some of his, you know, whatever else, you know, they're giving him stuff of very little substance to render, but he's rendering it in the best way, like, I've seen him do anything in a long time.
Yeah. But, yeah. And then, so now we get the fighting montage. I mean, in the middle of this is fighting montage again.
To be fair, it's only a double page spread.
Yeah.
Really, basically. And it's going to be like, these are where the fights that are in Versus this month will be, I'm sure, because I know one of them is Magic Versus.
Yeah.
Black Widow.
Boy, those
Colossus
people in...
Versus Red Hulk, I think, is the other one in Versus this month.
Those people in space are just hanging out in space, man.
They are still just hanging out in space.
Man, and Vision is just waypointing.
Yeah, but they're in lunar orbit, so they're pointing down at the moon, you know. And I love the fact that they go out of their way to include Legion and Professor X in they're there for a panel. And I'm like, I wonder what comic that's happening in.
Why?
And I swear to God, that I'm not going to really go out of my way to check or anything because I don't pick up the X-Men titles, but I would really like to believe that that is happening somewhere in an X title
and isn't
just really, really random panel. I mean, then you got your panel, Mystical City of Kunlun, so that's at least referring to what's going on in... I mean, what's happening in New Avengers at the minute is it's a story of how UT, the august personage in Jade, the ruler of Kunlun, has had a portentous dream of the coming of the Phoenix, and he's foretold the events of the story decades ago, and he believes he has found the girl, and she does appear to be able to channel the powers of the Phoenix, And he's put her to work training her as an Iron Fist. This is decades ago. And this guy we see here, what's his name? Liu Kang.
Lei Kung, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing it. He's the one responsible for it. So it's nice to see that that at least has some modicum of relevance in the main series, even if it's just one panel. But it's like, I'm really wondering what the relevance of what's happening in New Avengers is going to possibly have. Because he's really going to drop in out of nowhere if it suddenly has relevance in the main title.
Yeah.
But at least there's that one panel. There's the Scarlet Witch as well.
Yeah, and Scarlet Witch as well. No idea what she's doing, but okay. Cool.
We can count on to happen and make sense later.
Yeah, hopefully. So Tony takes off on his giant flying rocket robot thing.
Yeah.
If it's not fighting with fists, it's fighting with words. Captain America is like, Scott, you're crazy. And he's like, I'm not crazy. You're insane. Okay. You're trying to kill my people.
Yeah.
No, you do.
I am rubber and you're glue.
So Tony shoots the thing. We get two enormous panels of shooting
and exploding.
The Phoenix and exploding. And then another almost page of just explosion with more internal dialogue.
That one has dialogue on it. Nothing has been quite as cheap as that first issue with its 17 double-page silent spreads.
Yeah, this at least has some dialogue to go along with it. More burnt people. But then you have this sequence where Cap's like, you know, is everybody okay? Are we all right? Tony's asking if it worked. And you see Cap sort of have a moment of horror looking over his shoulder and telling Tony to hang on just a second. And you turn the page and you're like, huh?
It really is like a super duper, oh, what? Not in a bad way. But just in a really, like, WTF way of all the characters.
But I don't know. I have to say, I turn the page and it's like, oh, I thought Fear Yourself was over. Huh.
I didn't think we were going there.
I was really sore that that was done. Huh. So now we have the Phoenix Force. No, not really. It's, it's now the X-Men have been Phoenix powered with shards.
The Phoenix has been splintered and Namor, Cyclops, Colossus, Magic, and the White Queen are Phoenix powered now. And I'm like, I'm sure you picked these five guys for a reason, so I'm waiting to see what happens.
Yeah.
But, wow, that is weird!
Boy, and Emma's costume.
I think there's probably more coverage per square inch there than there was in the previous outfit.
Probably. It's just the distribution that I'm concerned about. It's which square inches are covered.
Well, their shoulders are protected now.
Yeah, their shoulders are at least protected. I mean, there's really nothing, you know, down the sides at all. But,
I don't think Phoenix hosts have to worry too much about that.
And they have Hope. So they're going to take Hope and fix her so that she can do what she was meant to do.
Yes, because Cyclops is insisting that this is wrong and that the Phoenix was supposed to be for Hope, but Hope's narration on the previous page is saying, like, after all of this, she realizes that she really doesn't want the Phoenix, and as it turned out, she says here, it didn't want me either. Now, I'm not sure if that's a literal or just simple. I'm not sure if that's her interpretation of what is happening. If that's just what she is a flowery way of her talking about the splintering of the Phoenix and it possessing these other characters, and like not a literal expression of the Phoenix not wanting her, because Cyclops is still talking. Oh, he says the gift of the Phoenix was meant for her, not us. And Hope is, I mean, it's like that's contrary to what Hope's saying. So I'm not sure if what Hope is saying is literal or just a figurative expression of the splintering.
Or that she's not ready, or that it's going to change her in order to.
That it literally was not coming for her.
They go into more detail on that. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. So we'll see.
I mean, like that's the monkey wrench in that if they've been wrong all along and the Phoenix was never coming for Hope. Well, first of all, what was with all the Phoenix Force stuff manifesting before it arrived on Earth through her? But it's like, if that is correct, and like Cyclops, even now that he's full of the power of the Phoenix, is still doggedly clinging to the idea that is like demonstrably wrong now, that's going to be interesting too.
Yeah.
It's weird, but there is some definite interesting, there's definitely interesting fodder here.
Yeah. And they're coming our way. They're coming to Earth.
So there you go. Oh, yeah.
And you got a whole 2 pages of what to read. And Avengers Academy is out. I didn't get to read that either. So I've got it. I just haven't had a chance to.
That's the final part of the... Well, it's not the final, because the next issue's a tie-in as well, but it's the final part of this three-parter of the X-Men teens being on the campus and Shaw being there and all the rest of it.
Yeah. So, but in 2 weeks!
Right, let's look over this now. Across these tie-ins. That one's in space. That one's in the past. That one's not related. That's the kids on Earth. That one's in space. That one, Uncanny X-Men, seems like it will reflect the content of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine and the X-Men is about a fight at the school before any of this goes down. And X-Men Legacy is about Rogue and She-Hulk fighting, and Moon Knight's involved as well, and some shit going down. Also at the school, I believe. So, you know.
Cool.
Yeah.
When do we get that Professor X Legion thing?
If that's going to be anywhere, I'd speculate it's in Legacy.
Okay.
No.
Anyway. Yeah, it was definitely the curveball issue. I mean, I thought would happen, that was not it.
Yeah, but that's good in a way.
Yeah, I think so. Although I am concerned about this yet again. Let's take our Marvel heroes. And it's like, it's almost like I expect that at DC Direct, where it's like, oh, okay, these will be the next set of figures to buy. Because it's like taking your Marvel heroes again and switch them up in terms of look and image in the book. But we know Marvel doesn't really do that for toys. They just do it for show.
They don't have a DC Direct to pump out a million of these differently colored lanterns for.
Right. So and that's why I talked about the fear itself, because it just invoked that idea of changing a character up, you know, to give a different look to him. But hopefully it'll have a very good story reason for that. It's Matt Fraction, so we'll see. I mean, you know.
Well, Fraction just wrote this issue, you know. I mean, we'll see. We're now 5 issues in, and one of each of the 5 writers have now written 1 issue.
Okay, so we'll go through the cycle.
We'll see if they're going to cycle again or what.
Yeah, so there you go. Cool. All right, let's talk about Minutemen then. You, sir, if you would.
Yeah, okay. Let me just get this open right now. Minutemen, let us try and just talk about this comic here. Because, you know, here we are, big controversial thing happening. There's controversy, but I would like to just look at this as a comic and not as the eye of a swirling storm of internet hate and chaos snake gods. So let's do that, huh?
Yeah, I'm for that.
Let's do that.
I think that's
fair. I read this one, so I'm going to be more talkative. Well,
so this is issue 1 of Before Watchmen, The Minutemen. And, you know, it's like, obviously now this is the first one, but the first of all the prequels, I mean. And before we see the others, we'll see as it goes on, but just like from the names and concepts alone, if there was one of these 6-7 prequels that you could have conceivably done and raised the least ire over, I think Minutemen would have to be it. Because it is not about it is about the previous generation. It is a story that is firmly relegated to the realm. I mean, really, this issue is a fleshed-out adaptation of the appendices of the original Watchmen series, the text appendices that are in the original issues of Watchmen. I mean, Cook, I believe, was originally against this project, if I remember, but they got him on board. He said he changed his mind. And it is to his credit, this is written and drawn by Darwin Cook, it's to his credit that he has, well, I think it's to his credit anyway, there's a whole debate there, that he has really, really played within the lines of what Moore and Gibbons established in the original Watchmen. You know, there is very little here that tells us anything new. Not in a bad way, you know, but this is all very, very much playing within the established parameters of what these characters did and how their lives went that Watchmen itself established. I mean, Cook is really, really not trying to reinvent the wheel here. He is really playing the game with what he does with this issue. So this issue is narrated by Hollis Mason, the original Night Owl, told through a framing sequence. All right, well, I say a framing sequence. It's just a prologue section on the page. I imagine each issue will probably begin with it, as he has just turned in the first draft of his book, Under the Hood, which is something that he's where some of the excerpts that we see in the original Watchmen series have come from, about his life as a hero and the Minutemen and that. Which is obviously the perfect way to tell this story, really. It's got a really great opening, to be honest. I love the two pages. Almost feel like they would work better as a double page spread instead of opposite leaf pages. You know, semicircular. I mean, I think it's got to be playing again on the way the original Watchmen opens, which is the scene of the pulling up off the button in the gutters. Yeah. You know, this starts with a baby's a bassinet, and the curving semicircle of that as a child looks out through it, spreads out to, you know, cameras constantly pulling out. You know, it's been really working in a cinematic setting, but he makes it work on the page as well. Pulls out to, you know, show a city street tunnel, to show the sun and the planets, and then there's this great bit where it's like the turning point of Hollis Mason's life. It's Hollis Mason's life just summed up so incredibly in like four panels. The next panel is the semicircular dome of Dr. Manhattan's head as superpower is introduced to the world and Hollis Mason's life is irrevocably turned around. So the next circular image you see is just like a muddy circle of a street sign. Illuminated, I think the image there is supposed to be that's a street light has illuminated a circle of road, pulling out to a clock until the clock is just finally resting on the mantelpiece. And of course, a clock is an iconic piece of imagery associated with Watchmen too, the Doomsday Clock. And it's just like it's a circle constantly pulling out, changing dramatically in the middle until it rests until it's just a clock face resting on the mantelpiece of a retired man. It is a life in four panels. It's very impressive. So anyway, on to the actual story. Chapter 1, 8 minutes, essentially introduces us to the different members of the Minutemen in chronological order of their debut through a series of short vignettes. There's not a world of story matter to talk about here. First, we meet Hood of Justice, who was the first hero who began everything, in a lovely monochromatic sequence.
You know,
it's a world of blacks and grays until suddenly the superhero is born and color is introduced into it in deadly red. You know, that's great. Then we meet the Silk Spectre, followed by Mason describing how he himself became the Night Owl. The comedian, Edward Blake, expanding on the idea, I think, mentioned in passing in the Watchmen ancillary material that he used to patrol crime on the waterfront. It's a fantastic... I mean, it's like, you read the Watchmen, and you only ever know Blake after he's been established for a while in Watchmen, and the first sign of instability you see is the attempted rape, and then it just gets worse and worse from there. But here, it's like, this guy was nuts from the start! Why did they let him in?
Yeah,
I'm tired of eating an egg.
Because he's funny.
Funny in the head.
Yeah, funny in the head.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's funny.
I've never seen eating an egg coming off as so terrifying. But then a lot of that is born of what we know where this character will wind up going as well.
Yeah.
Mothman is introduced following that. Then Dollar Bill is an interesting one because he really does just get a one-page introduction. Like, we get a little insight through Mason into each of the characters. Like, aside from the comedian and Silk Spectre, the rest of the Minutemen, and Mason, of course, and Mason. The rest of the Minutemen are all dead come the modern-day Watchmen. So these are characters that we never really get to know outside of the ancillary material, which fills in their histories, which is what Cook is working around here. And Dollar Bill really doesn't get anything here at all. Like, he is a mascot for a bank. And all we ever see of him is a one-page version of, like, a little advert for the bank. You need to spend some time in the big house.
I'm wondering if Cook here is maybe playing with an idea, and I don't know. I'll have to go back and look at the Watchmen material, but I wonder if he's playing with an idea that either Mason didn't care much for Dollar Bill or didn't get along with him or something, because he's the only real character here that doesn't get any kind of explanation, exposition.
Well, Captain Metropolis didn't really get anything either, but that'll come later, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It just kind of, it struck me how abrupt that was in the midst, definitely. You know, yeah. Because it's smack between this entire sequence about, you know, the strengths and seeming weakness of Mothman, yeah. And then this really redemptive, you know, out of time sequence as far as in terms of the progressiveness comment on Silhouette. And then smack in the middle of that, you have five panels of...
It is an almost dismissive introduction of Dollar Bill.
Exactly.
Now, I think that will definitely build on that. Something will happen. I mean, but the idea may be... I mean, I may just be trying to say that that's all he was. There is, the guy was a mascot. He wasn't somebody actually out fighting crime. I can't remember if there was any greater story to Dollar Bill in the ancillary material. That, you know, that might just be that there
other
was
than,
nothing.
Yeah, to say other about than it. I mean, the yeah. most famous thing I guess he did in Watchmen was die.
Yes, he got his cape. He got his cape stuck in a revolving door and was shot to death, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, that was his, and that was which became a joke later in The Incredibles, I think.
No cape.
Yeah.
Oh, you did that too well, man.
I really wanted to watch the 3.5-hour ultimate cut of Watchmen this afternoon, but I didn't have time. I had too much other stuff to watch this weekend.
Yeah.
I've never watched the ultimate, because I've never watched the director's cut thus far. I've still only ever watched like the original theatrical cut, and I know the director's cut has like just a load of deleted scenes in it, and then the ultimate cut is the director's cut plus the Black Freighter stuff. And this put me in the mood for watching it, basically.
Yeah.
I've never seen the movie.
Have read the book, right?
I've read the book. I have not seen the movie.
You should watch them.
It's about as good as you could do with doing, like, the book in a movie, but
I don't know
that it's a good movie.
I don't want to look at someone's penis the whole time.
it is an enormous penis in that one sequence.
Really sad thing, you know. That is so sad.
Don't think I'm like a little kid when it comes to that. I'd be like,
real. But the entire world is that kid, because there is good stuff you could say about Watchmen. There is bad stuff you can say about Watchmen. The whole themes in it, and going beyond even the themes of the story, like whether or not the deconstruction of the superhero is a relevant message to study today, years after the idea has become passé when Watchmen did it first. I have met people who read the book and loved the film, read the book and hated the film, never read the book and loved the film, never read the book and hated the film, but big blue cock is still the primary takeaway from that film.
Sad.
And that is terribly disappointing, you know?
Yeah, of all the things that are in the movie, that gets focused. But
I enjoyed the book, though. So.
Well, anyway, and then the issue wraps up with Captain Metropolis writing the personal ad that will bring the Watchmen together. Not the Watchmen. Bring the Minutemen together.
Right.
And yeah, that's it. It is literally just 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 vignettes, one on each of the Minutemen, showing, you know, what they were doing before their team came together. It's a beginning. It is really hard to, you know, nail down this, because it's so undaring?
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's like I wanted it to go one way or the other, I think. Going to pick it up, I was like, all right, I either want this to go all out and be, like, full on in the Watchmen universe, or I want it to just be like, fuck it all, we're going to just do this and do it in a different direction. And I really felt like this was just the safest thing to start this with, where it was like, just this right out of the book.
It is a good comic, you know, just like on its own merits.
The art's amazing.
Couldn't go wrong. I mean, there is no better choice for a creator on this. This is a Silver Age style thing because these were all the previous generation of heroes. Silver Age style team formation, Darwin Cook, you couldn't do better. Like, the perfect marriage of concept and creator, absolutely. And as a comic, like, just taken on its own as an introduction to all these new characters, setting up all their history and putting in the germ of the formation of the team, like, it's all there. It really is. I think anybody who didn't even know about Watchmen could probably pick up this single issue and read this in isolation. Suffers or fails for being hooked in with Watchmen.
Like Josh in the chat, he's never read the book or seen the movie. This would probably be a good way to get him introduced to these characters.
I think you could pick this up and read this. You get inside the head of our lead character. The sinister mystery of who the justice is preserved. What's the best way? The cheesecakey sex appeal, non super powered effort of Silk Spectre is all on display. You know, Hollis Mason becoming Night Owl out of a genuine desire to fight crime, but at the same time, you know, preserve public safety and be friendly with, you know, he's the complete contrast to Hood of Justice. It's all in there. The comedian, I've never seen a more straightforward, horrifyingly, I've never seen eating an egg be so sinister, you know. Mothman's insanity is covered great. Dollar Bill's simplistic cliche origin and characterization, and the guy who died like a schmuck, it's right there. Silhouette, this is great. Silhouette totally transcends the one note takeaway you get from her. And this is why I'm looking forward to Cook Silk Spectre next week as well. Because if there's one thing Watchmen doesn't do good, it doesn't do its female characters good. The second Silk Spectre is really a prop for a lot of male characters' plots to rotate around. And the adult Silk Spectre really comes off poorly, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, she was ripped, but it's okay. He got to finish. It doesn't, you know, he didn't. Well, hey, what else is there? it's not like it's a statement on women or anything. It's just that she was a bad person and a broken woman, not because of the rape, because she was already. She was not a good person who did not have a good life and made some very bad choices and wound up in a very bad place as a result of it, you know. But unfortunately, there is no really good, strong female characters in Watchmen. The female characters of Watchmen suffer. You know, Silhouette is only ever remembered for being the lesbian who got murdered for being a lesbian, you know. But even within these four pages of her, she, you know, really, really moves beyond that. And we see the sort of things she was out there doing. And the sort of things that, you know, she's a vicious one as well, you know. And what she really does is she commits what I saw someone describe as a Watchman no-no, which is that there is some artist tomfoolery there with her vaulting over the panel borders, you know. I mean, it's just an artistic flourish. It doesn't, no fourth walliness about it or anything, but that is a real, like, no-no for Watchmen. I mean, because the book manages to preserve the, like, solid panel grid layouts of Watchmen. You know, it looks like the panel structure, the page structure Dave Gibbons would create. That's weird, and I don't know if that's supposed to be some kind of, this is not my theory, I read this, you know, I'm just repeating somebody else here, but it was interesting enough to repeat, was like, is that supposed to be some kind of meta commentary on the way she's transcending the boundaries of, like, of the way that she and the other female characters are portrayed within Watchmen? Is she the one where they're really trying to take a step with? I don't know, but, you know, it's all in there. These characters can definitely stand on their own within the context of this story. And I don't think that they suffer for being Watchmen. I don't think that they are any less completely portrayed that he's treated them with a gentle hand, because we as readers will all know them from Watchmen already, you know? I think everything that you would need to know these characters, at least on this simple introductory level, is presented to you here, you know?
You know, I understand what they're saying. Sorry to back up a second. I understand what they're saying with that, but, you know, all these characters get at least a little bit of panel break. There's at least some element of their, you know, bits that break the panel. So I don't think I think that he's paying enough of an homage through, you know, the format, but I don't think that's...
I'm looking here and I'm not seeing what you're saying.
Well, I mean, there's word balloons that break out. They each have, like, their own corner tags.
Oh, yeah, but nowhere, you know, anywhere else in the art does a character physically actually bound over the panels of the artwork.
I think there's a little ticky-tacky, but okay. You know, that's what I'm saying. I don't want to read too much into it.
I get you, but I mean, it's like every vignette begins with a little overlapping newspaper clipping or magazine cover or magazine spread but that's because it's not part of the events that are happening as you see in the scene. You know, it's like your chapter header almost.
Yeah,
you know, it's a header. It's not part of what is happening. But with Silhouette, which he actually vaults the panel borders, that is happening within the narrative right then and there. And it is definitely different to those. You know, there's a difference there.
Okay, fair enough. Last time I checked.
And it's not my theory, as I say, but there's distinct. There's a you know, whether or not the theory is there and is on the money or not, like, she is doing something nobody else in the comic is doing. That is happening. That's the long and the short of it. It's good. You know, it is good. I think anybody could pick it up. There are, of course, all the issues that surround the validity of it. It surprises me not a bit that Cook is certainly, as the artist to kick things off, definitely playing it. There's an air of safety.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is played with the net. I mean, like you said, I mean, there really isn't even any deviation outside per se of the established material. Maybe, like you said, the most was Silhouette, but that's because nothing was produced. So that's where there's the most room, I think, to play.
Yep.
Because the only thing that she was known for was dying because she was a lesbian. So,
And I mean the dialogue here, the narration goes out of its way to dismiss that as important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it puts her deeds as being the most important thing about her, and it dismisses the fact that her being a lesbian has anything to do with who she is or what she accomplished or why she accomplished it or why anybody how it influenced anybody that she directly helped, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for all the sadder, because we know what wind up happening to the character, but I feel like she is the one to watch as far as what's happening here with this book. Because she gets quite a long sequence. Like, she gets 4 pages, Dollar Bill gets 1, Mothman gets 2, Comedian gets 2, Night Owl himself gets 4, Silk Spectre gets 2, Hood of Justice gets 3. You know, next to Night Owl himself, she gets the longest sequence. And that's no coincidence.
I don't think Captain Metropolis got much time in the book.
He got three.
Does, but I'm saying in the original Watchmen material, I don't know that he was known for much more than bringing the team together and being possibly gay.
Yeah, that's it. Him and Hood of Justice weren't even, like, confirmedly dead. Like, they had just... Well, I mean, it's like, you know, that's that long-standing thing about Watchmen, is that they might not be dead. They might have just run off together and left the life behind.
Right.
You know, that's your takeaway from Captain Metropolis. But, you know, as a first issue, it is like legitimately good. You know, this is a legitimately like high scoring book as a comic. Setting aside the issues and whatever else, it's not even issues of artistry really. That's the thing. Like, it's really all it's a lot of the issues surrounding it and controversy are more based in creators' rights than in artistry. Because, you know, I mean, if you're going to kick up a fuss about whether or not a comic is created for the sake of art or not, you're going to destroy the industry. You know, Avengers versus X-Men there and created for the state of art. You know, welcome to capitalism, kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, whatever all else about what went on with Moore and Gibbons. And that is a legitimate concern. There is some legitimate legal and moral iffiness there. But that's not what we want to talk about when we're actually reviewing these books. And, you know, they've started very well. Whether or not they can keep up the high quality, you know, I got to say I doubt. But Minuteman is the conceivably the one that could stand on its own the most. It's got the best possible creator I think you could have put on it, and it is paying tremendous respect to the boundaries established for the character by the works while managing to grow characters like Silhouette and hopefully the other characters who didn't get a lot to do. And I think it could all add up to be something great.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's very cool.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
There's also this Curse of the Crimson Corsair back up there.
Yeah!
I don't know if there's much... I mean, it's 2 pages long. You can't really...
I was going to say, it's only a couple pages, so...
Yeah.
I mean, the trick with this one is that the way the Watchmen books are working is that this week we've got... what, Minutemen? Next week we've got Silk Spectre, and I forget what order they're in, but in the last 2 weeks of the month we've got Comedian and Night Owl. I think it's in that order. Then next month starts... And first we've got, I believe it's Ozymandias. Then we've got, in the second week, we've got Minutemen. The third week, we've got Silk Spectre. The fourth week, we've got Comedian. Then, in the first week of next month, of the month after that, we get Night Owl. And then the week after that, we get Rorschach number one. And then after that, we get... whatever the other one is. I've forgotten at this stage. It's hard to keep track. But basically, like, they're rotating the number ones in groups like that. So, but there are still only 4 titles coming out every month, so we will go sometimes that it could be 6 weeks between issues if something so technically like these issues won't be released on a monthly schedule. So, but every issue consecutively is going to have 2 pages of The Curse of the Crimson Corsair in it.
Awesome.
Which is, of course, it's written by Len Wein, original series editor, and John Higgins, who's the art by John Higgins, who was the original series colorist. And it is a riff on the Black Freighter. Now, it's not directly related to it or anything, but it is just like a thematic riff on the Black Freighter pirate metaphor story that runs parallel with Watchmen. I have never had much time for the Black Freighter. I think as a metaphor, it's insufferably oblique. But on an artistic level, it works well within the comic, as a comic within a comic. It's no surprise at all that it didn't make the leap to the film, because the artistic simplicity of it is lost. You know, in a comic, it's comic in a comic. In a film, it's a comic. It's a comic in a film through the medium of a cartoon. You know,
it's not the same. It doesn't.
The idea is lost distinctly, but this is just the story of Gordon McLaughlin, who was on a ship with a particularly harsh captain whose harshness sat ill with him. And that's as far as we get in the 2 pages. You really can't pass comment on it, but it looks lovely.
Yeah, it looks really nice.
Yeah, it looks great.
I'm not picking up all the Watchmen's, so I won't really find out how this goes.
Which
ones are you going to pick up?
I'm getting this one, and I'm getting Silk Spectre.
Yeah, I couldn't not. It's like if I was going to... Once I passed that, like, 4, I was like, oh, I'm just getting them all. So, there was no hope at that point.
I'd like to see how crazy the Comedian gets.
Well, I couldn't pass up Darwyn Cook drawing and writing Watchmen.
No.
And Amanda Connor on the Silk Spectre with Cook writing. I mean, oh my God, you'd have to tie me down to stop me from buying that. but none of the other writers really, you know, I mean, they're all, you know, all good writers. The only one that makes me suck my teeth is Straczynski, because Straczynski has yet to do anything good for DC.
Yeah.
Although they have some fantastic artists with Joe and Andy Kubert on Night Owl, and Adam Hughes on Dr. Manhattan. I just don't have enough faith in Straczynski to pull it off. He might, you know. I've read plenty of good stuff from Straczynski, but such a significant project, and his history of work at DC does not fill me with confidence. And
maybe that's the reason for the rotating weird thing. Then
I don't know. Keep the schedule. I would imagine these guys have been working on these for some time now. You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But that is before Watchmen.
There you go. Nice.
Good. It's good.
You know. Oh yeah. You should definitely read this.
It is legitimately worth your time to read it, even if it does play.
And keep your trade of Watchmen handy. Maybe that would be a good idea. I didn't do that. I should have. Because I think I'll go back and reference. You know, check some references and things in it.
Well, I mean, that was the thing about the Watchmen film, was that they even turned the ancillary material into a documentary.
Yes.
You know, everything about the Watchmen graphic novel, from the Black Freighter was an animated short, and all of the news clippings and everything was turned into like a talking head documentary with interviews with the characters and everything. That's the one thing they haven't cut up and put back into the film, because there's no way to make that fit narratively. No.
But that documentary is awesome. The Under the Hood documentary is awesome.
I wasn't so sure about it, but it was great. I mean, the Black Freighter is rubbish. There's stripped of any relevance to Watchmen. It's just a rubbish little story about pirates.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, without having it in the comic and mixed in there, it doesn't reference anything. And I agree. I always thought that was still a bit odd. Anyway,
pointless in isolation, loses its artistic simplicity when incorporated. It's a no winner.
Yeah. So even in the original book. So.
Anyway. Yeah, even in the book, I have very little time for it. Like, as I say, as a metaphor, it's just woefully oblique.
Yeah, it's a little Anyway.
What a pirates, you say?
I mean, I get the reference in terms of what he was trying to go for in terms of element, but not... Anyway, pointless. So awesome, so there you go. That's our new layout, so I hope that worked. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, I think it worked well. So. Rapid fire in the middle.
All right. So next week we'll have Silk Spectre, so that's fun. And we'll have other stuff, so that'll be cool. Who knows who will be playing Chris Triplett next week? He probably will not be back next week. So
you got to watch Justice League versus the Elite.
Justice League versus the Elite. We'll watch that. We'll talk about that.
Is it Justice League or is it Superman?
I'm sorry, Superman.
Sorry. Superman. Yes, you're quite right. I said it wrong.
I just say what you say, sir. That's all I do. That is all I'm here for. So, So there you go. Cool stuff. Fun stuff. So, anything else before we go? Before we get out of here?
I think that's everything. Nothing else I can think of that's worthy of drawing attention to this week.
Excellent. All right. Very good. Well,
We got next week. I don't know if you guys are going to be picking this up, JD. I'm sure you are. Spider-Man, number one, is up next week.
Ooh. Yeah, I probably am.
But yeah, I think we got our two for the end of the show next week, though.
Yeah, that'll be
Spider-Man and Silk Spectre.
So check out Spider-Man and Silk Spectre. There you go. Free preview for next week. Congratulations. So cool.
Ooh.
All right, go to the website, fanboyversus.com. Check us out. You can get all of our past shows. Whether you want it in audio or in video. And video is fun, because you can see us. And we're pretty awesome. So, you can also follow us on Twitter, @FanboyVS. I think I retweeted at least the Avengers news, Earth Mightiest Heroes, from earlier this week. There's a little bit out. Brian, I think, posted that through as well, so there you go. So sometimes you'll get some news, but usually you'll get some live updates from our show when we record, which we typically do live on Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. GMT time.
That's right.
For those
Greenwich Mean Time time.
Other side of the ocean. So there you go. Congratulations on 60 years of a queen, so that's fun, in England. I watched The Boat on TV last week. That was fun. Anyway, that's our show. Thanks so much for tuning in. And please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.